back. It's a crime. It's a crime.
Here come the drums.
C-R-I-M-E-W-A-V.
Yeah, yeah.
You're rolling with the Crime Wave, the internet's first and only podcast devoted to the crime short story. I'm Seth Harwood, your host, the first name in crime podcast fiction, and I'm ready to bring you this week's story. The Crime Wave is produced by Mystery Dog, Aldo Calcagno, and it is not safe for your minivans. That means it might contain swearing, violence, and all types of shit. This week's story is by Krista Faust. Krista Faust is the self-proclaimed, cynical, hard-boiled bitch with a fetish for noir cinema, tattoos, and seamed stockings. She's worked as a Times Square peep show girl, professional dominatrix, and a movie tie-in novelizer. Among her 8 books is the novelization of Snakes on a Plane, seriously, as well as Hood Town and her most recent novel, Money Shot, published by Hard Case Crime.
The story is called Cut Man, and it's by me, Krista Faust. I'm a cut man, but I'm not a man. It might take you a minute to figure that out from looking at me, but you can take my word for it. Fighters call me Sir all the time. I don't really mind. In a way, it's better. When guys say they're into 2 chicks together, you can bet they don't mean me. Sure, they love to watch skinny college broads making out in bars, fake titty porn stars poking their tongues into each other for a paycheck. But the idea of somebody like me having a pretty woman just makes them sick, or mad, or both. Well, if you've got a problem with the fact that I unbuckle my dick when I'm done with it, then to hell with you. You can just sit there and bleed. I learned the cut man trade from my daddy. A cut man's the person in the fighter's corner whose job it is to stop cuts from bleeding. It sounds simple, but there's a real art to it. Every fighter's different. Not to mention the pressure from the fact that everybody's counting on you. You can't stop the blood, they stop the fight. Nothing a fighter hates more than stoppage on account of a lousy cut. My daddy was one of the best cutmen in the state, but he's been dead 6 years now. Respect for him is the main reason people are okay about letting a big ugly dyke mess with their fighters. Daddy never treated me like a girl, so nobody else does. It's the way I like it. I guess you heard about what happened with Mia. Christ, who hasn't? But even with those nosy reporters and those cops and all their questions, I never told anybody my side of the story. Not till now, anyway. They called her Tinkerbell, Mia Tinkerbell Ortega. She had this wild black hair that wouldn't stay braided, strong shoulders, thighs that could snap you in half, a stone-cold opening bell stare-down that gave me goosebumps every time. She wasn't real pretty in the face. Hell, she was a fighter. What do you expect? She had that flattened, broken nose that all the pugs get. Wary, dark eyes. Acne scars across her high, Indio cheekbones. She had a tough face. She wasn't pretty. She was beautiful. She fought at 122, so she just barely made featherweight soaking wet. She was ambitious like that. She liked to go after bigger opponents. She was a real dancer, so light on her feet it looked like she was floating an inch off the canvas. It's where she got the nickname, Tinkerbell. She would flit around the ring like a little fairy, and you'd be all caught up in how cute she was. And that left hook would come around the corner like a speeding truck, and knock you on your ass. It hurt my heart to look at her. Of course she went for men. Not like I'd have had a shot anyway with a mug like this. I could still dream, can't I? I still do sometimes, even after what happened. My girl Stacy had up and left me about 4 months earlier. Stacy was an exotic dancer. People used to ask if that bothered me, her shaking her stuff in front of all those men. Didn't. After all, I was the one she went home with at the end of the night, right? When my friends asked why she left me, I told them I had no idea. That was a lie. I knew exactly why, I just didn't want to talk about it. See, I'm kind of shy in bed. I don't like to take off my undershirt and shorts. I'll do anything a woman wants to make her feel good, but it takes me a really long time to get comfortable enough to let her touch me back, even through the shorts. Stacy was always on me about that, said she needed to express her love in a physical way, to give as well as take. I really wanted to let her do those things, but in the end, I just couldn't. So she left me for a chick she met on the internet, some vegetarian photographer with a lot of tattoos, political bumper stickers on her Volvo. One of the things that made me fall so hard for Mia was that she was shy, like me. She wouldn't shower or even change in front of the other fighters. A lot of the girl boxers have bikini shots all over the internet and like to fight in the skimpiest possible outfit, get the guys all worked up. Not Mia. She always wore the long trunks and a thick tank top. There was a rumor going around that someone had touched her when she was little. Maybe that's why she became a fighter. It's pretty embarrassing to admit it now, but I had this whole corny fantasy going about Mia and me. How I was going to romance her, real old-fashioned. How I was going to give her plenty of time to feel safe, to open up slow and beautiful like a Christmas amaryllis. No man could ever be as good to her as me, because I understood her like no man ever would. She never gave me the chance. She didn't want somebody to be good to her. She was the kind of girl who went for men who hit her. When I heard Mia was in the hospital, I knew what I had to do. It was that simple. There were a bunch of different stories about what happened to Mia, but I knew in my heart that it was Santiago Diaz put her there. Diaz, good fighter, bad person. A handsome light heavy with an iron chin, cocky as fuck. I worked his corner a few times and he always treated me like a necessary evil, life support for the N-swell. Still, he knew better than to make any cracks to my face. You know that list of people you don't want mad at you? Your cook, your computer guy, your gynecologist. Well, if you're a fighter, put your cut man on the top of that list. Diaz didn't love Mia. He just wanted to piss on her, to own her and make sure everybody knew it. He would talk shit all day long about her, how she liked it in the ass, how she couldn't get enough of what he had. He kept leaning on Mia to retire because he didn't like women boxing, said it was unnatural. He told her she'd better pull out of the McDougal fight if she knew what was good for her. She obviously did not know what was good for her. She knocked Carrie McDougal out in the first round, and the next thing I heard, Mia was in the hospital with internal bleeding. Car accident, they said. Or maybe she fell. Yeah, right. You'd think it would be this big moral dilemma, deciding to kill a man. To me, it seemed like the obvious response. As natural as reaching for one of the cotton swabs behind my ear. I decided to put cyanide in the Avatine. Now, you're probably wondering where I got that cyanide. Well, you're just going to have to keep on wondering. I don't care if the whole world finds out about what I did, but I don't want to piss off the person who hooked me up. You wouldn't either if you knew who I meant. Anyway, I knew this would be the best way to do it. The latex gloves they make us wear now would protect me. All I had to do was make sure I didn't put a swab between my teeth after I touched the poison. I got that bad habit from my daddy. And it was a real hard habit to break. I knew I was probably going to go to jail for what I planned to do. Maybe even get the needle. But it didn't matter. All I could think about was Mia. I hoped maybe she would write to me, thanking me for saving her from that scumbag boyfriend of hers. Maybe she'd even visit. The deciding was easy, but the waiting was nothing short of hell. Diaz had his regular guy, a real control freak named Alvarez, who usually took care of everything. even though he was older than dirt and sometimes looked like he was going to keel over dead in the corner before the end of the first round, he didn't want anybody else to lay a hand on his fighter. He didn't miss a single fight for what felt like 100 years. Then, finally, he had some kind of problem where the doctors needed to open him up and poke around in his insides. I got booked to round out Diaz's corner from the upcoming title fight against Jamal Benjamin. When I finally got my chance, I thought maybe I wouldn't be able to get it up after all. I thought maybe I was crazy to do something like this for a woman I barely knew. But then I'd see Mia working the heavy bag at the gym, and her sweaty shirt would lift up a little bit on one side, giving me a quick flash of the ugly bruises across the curve of her hip and lower back. I would see her like that, and it would all make perfect sense. I'll admit I was nervous. The night before, I couldn't sleep for shit. I kept on wondering what would happen to my stuff if I went to jail. Not like I had much, but I did have some photos of my daddy and me, and some old cool old fight cards that were maybe worth something. I didn't have any family. My mother had died trying to squeeze out my big ugly head, and my daddy had been an orphan, raised by the state. It had just been the two of us until the emphysema finally killed him. I didn't like the idea of my landlord tossing all my stuff in the trash, but I couldn't let stupid sentimental thoughts about old pictures keep me from staying focused on what really mattered. What mattered was Mia. I just knew that she would love me back if she could see how far I was willing to go for her. That morning, I called up an old friend and asked her to take Gypsy Rose, the scrappy old cat that Stacy had left behind. That cat was plain gray and not very friendly, but we got along. In a way, it's like we both got dumped. Anyway, it was nice to have someone to come home to. I couldn't worry about photos and stuff, but I did want to make sure that cat was going to be okay. The day passed as slow as the night, but it did pass. I kept on looking at flowers and sparrows and the sparkly sign on the ice cream parlor and thinking, is this the last time I'm ever going to see that? Eventually, it was time to head over to the venue. Once I got there, it was better. The raw animal sound of the crowd, the fighters' wordless language of grunts and heavy breath, and the dull slap of leather against flesh. The smell of sweat under hot lights. These things were as comfortable and familiar as my favorite jacket. They made it seem like it would work. I stood outside the ropes watching Diaz from his corner and thinking, Christ, what if he knocks Benjamin out? What if he goes the distance and doesn't get cut? But Benjamin kept on peppering him with these fast, surgical jabs all through the third round, and finally, it came. The red stuff that I'd been waiting for. The bell rang and Diaz hit the corner, squinting against the blood. I reached into the ice for the cold metal end swell and pressed it against the growing mouse beneath his eye, while my other hand rolled an epinephrine-soaked swab in the open cut. I gave the cut some steady pressure for a few heartbeats, then mopped the rest of the blood away with a wad of clean gauze. When the cut above his eyebrow was as dry as it was going to get, I tossed the swab and the gauze and packed the cut with the Avatine flour and cyanide mixture. He hissed and swallowed a curse, trying to be a man about it. I didn't feel nervous anymore. My hands moved automatically like they always did. They squeezed and spread the lips of the cut, testing to see if the blood had stopped. It had. I tossed the endswell back in the bucket, slapped a smear of my daddy's special formula cut salve across Diaz's eyebrow, and then nodded to the ref. The chief cornerman shoved Diaz's mouthpiece back between his teeth, throwing out some last-minute advice in Spanish and smacking his ass as he stood. Diaz tipped his head from side to side, shifting his weight and shaking out his arms. He looked as solid and confident as ever. No sign that he was feeling the effect of the cyanide. When he TKO'd Benjamin less than a minute later, my heart filled with a cautious excitement. If Diaz dropped dead right then and there in the ring, the cops and the athletic commission would have to get involved right away. If he felt weak, dizzy, and confused after the fight, everyone would think he was just punchy. They'd tell him to go home and sleep it off. He would never wake up, but I could be across the border before anyone thought to look for me. Of course, that's not how it happened. I hadn't seen Mia all through the fight. She made a point of being there for all Diaz's fights, even though he was never there for hers. I thought it was a little weird, her not being there, but I just figured she was late, or maybe she finally had enough of him. I had other things on my mind, so I didn't give it a second thought. I was pretty surprised to see her standing there in the aisle after the final bell, but not nearly as surprised as I was when I noticed that she had a gun. Her hair was all wild and coming out of her braid the way it did when she fought. She looked beautiful, just like she always did, except something was different. It was her eyes. Her eyes were black. Dead. She raised the gun and shot Santiago Diaz in the face, while the ref held up his gloved hand in victory. Then she shot herself. It was big news, of course. You'd think we were in Madison Square Garden with the number of people who claimed to have been there. Diaz's family was very religious, so they refused an autopsy. Besides, it's not like there was any question about what had killed him. No one ever found out about the cyanide. I still have bad dreams about what happened. I keep seeing her empty, hopeless eyes, and the way all those little frizzy licks of hair puffed out around the place where the bullet came out of the back of her head. I keep thinking, I could have done it different somehow. I keep thinking, if only I had acted sooner, maybe I could have saved her. I would have done anything for that girl, but I'll tell you what, every time I drive past that sparkly ice cream parlor sign, I'm glad to see it.
That is Cut Man by Krista Faust. You can find more information about her at KristaFaust.com. I'll have a link for that in the show notes. I'm Seth Harwood. I hope you've enjoyed this episode of Crime Wave and that you'll sign up on our site to get every episode downloaded automatically into your podcatcher so that you can stay tuned with us as we bring you more of the best from contemporary crime writing. And I'm glad that you joined us. Come back again to see our IMEWAV and catch more of the wave and the crime.
In fact, it's a crime. It's a crime.
Here come the drums!
It started with the pulp magazines. And then things changed. It went away for a little while. But now the crime short story has reemerged in this, the age of the internet, with the brand new Crime Only podcast. That's right, Crime Wave is here. CRIMEWAV. We left the last E off because everybody needs some crime in their lives. So come over to CrimeWave.com, where your host, Seth Harwood, will bring you a new story each week by some of the best crime authors in the contemporary writing universe. That's right, CRIMEWAV.com spells your new place for crime fiction.